She has attacked me for being unqualified.
Well, it's kind of a silly thing to say, but I'm going to trust the voters of New York who know me.
Thank you, and I would simply say to everyone, L'chaim.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09 and it is Friday. It's April 8th, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell, the last business day of the week. It is Friday, finally. We have a lot to cover for you today, but let's give you a little bit of market intel from overnight around the globe. Dow, first of all, I'll tell you, Dow futures are higher this morning, 85 points. The S&P and NASDAQ futures also higher. Crude oil trading higher. Futures on that as well are up. All of the indices, it looks, in Europe are green this morning. And in Asia, for the most part, the biggest gain in Asia, the Hang Seng up about 104. And in Europe, it looks like all of the indices that are still open are green this morning, but the U.S. futures are pointing toward a higher open on Wall Street. What's driving all of this? Well, it could have been a little bit of discussion last night between all of the Fed chairs, former and current, including Janet Yellen, who says the U.S. economy is not a bubble economy. She says, however, a rate increase is still in the cards. 5:10. Let's get right to your portfolio, right to some analysis. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management is with us, as he is every Friday. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve.
Are you in a good mood today? You're smiling. Things are green.
Well, it just depends on the day of the week, time of the day, as far as how the markets have been going this week. So yesterday we were down a bunch, the day before we were up a bunch, and the futures are indicating we're up a bunch again. So it's an ADD market this week.
It is, and I'm scared to think of what it might be in about an hour or two when more people digest stuff that's going on. But you saw the Fed chairman or heard the Fed chairman's remarks yesterday. Again, looks like rate increases on the table still. Still some concern about the economy.
Well, I mean, the thing that has really opened the door and has really changed, and what was interesting in having all of those Fed chair together, when you take a look at how things have progressed from Paul Volcker through Bernanke and Greenspan and Bernanke now to Yellen, is now it's very much open. You had to guess what Paul Volcker was doing when he was in charge of the Fed. You had to kind of look at the what they were doing in the markets to determine whether they changed rates at all. Now we have a press conference and announce everything. And we're now talking a lot more about the foreign markets than we ever did. It was very much a domestic market. We were only concerned about inflation and employment. But now we're trickling in and taking a look at China and Europe and everything else as key inputs into our rate decisions.
It was interesting to see all of these Fed chairs up there this event was sort of a rare event to see all of them there. We were talking before the show started about how there wasn't a lot of attention paid to Paul Volcker, and he was sort of like like the quiet mouse in the corner. Why is that, do you think?
It's hard to be a quiet mouse when you're 6'6". I think part of it is because now the Fed has really moved so far away from inflation, and he was certainly the guy that gets pointed at as saying he killed inflation in the 80s, and we're now in a very different environment. And like I said before, what the Fed is battling right now is a very different war than what Volcker was fighting. We're fighting deflation, we're fighting high debt, and how do we get the economy going and those types of things, as opposed to worried about 10-12% inflation rate. So it's a very, very different environment, and I think some people have felt that maybe Paul Volcker is a warrior from a different time, different war.
Yeah. The candidates for president, some of them, including Donald Trump on the Republican side, but also Bernie Sanders to a lesser extent on the Democratic side, seem to want more openness from the Fed, Trump especially. There seems to be this concern among some in the financial community that any tinkering by the political types is going to mess this up. You mentioned how open it has become. Can it be more open? And will this be a concern if somebody starts tinkering with this?
You know, I think it's open enough. You know, one of the things that we've looked at over the last couple of weeks, and we've talked about it here, is you have all the Fed governors talking different days, and it's having an impact on the market. So Yellen will talk maybe last night, Bullard a couple of days ago, and as they make their comments about their views on the economy and the markets, it moves those markets. I think really what's missing now is fiscal policy. Monetary policy has done a lot, but the other part that is missing is really action from not central banks, but governments around the world.
And governments around the world are in deep, deep doo-doo. You just have to look to Japan, China, Brazil. I mean, there's so many of them on the brink. Then you have Europe and Great Britain talking about Brexit. You know, exit from the European Union. They need to get their stuff together, don't they?
They do. And again, I think everybody is fighting the same battle, is very high debt levels. They've increased liquidity tremendously. So, you know, liquidity is not the issue anymore. Low interest rates. And again, that translates through in currency and trying to reduce the level of their currency versus foreigners so that they can get economic activity going. But again, what's missing is, you know, good fiscal policy from governments in trying to get their spending going.
I know it's one of our territories, but in Puerto Rico, they're really in a deep trouble. I saw yesterday a report where there's absolutely zero money in the pension accounts. And they're not just broke, they're beyond broke in Puerto Rico. That's the other thing, too. You have these, when politicians get involved, they tend to spend money inappropriately.
Well, politicians' first job is to get reelected, and so they're going to speak to their constituents and try to do whatever it's going to take them to get elected. We have to look no further than the state of Illinois and how that works there. So our pension system is not quite as broke, but not far away from being a pretty broke system as well.
We're having a conversation this morning with Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. The Internal Revenue Service announced that taxpayers who don't have a bank account or credit card can now pay their tax bill at one of 7,000 participating 7-Eleven stores in 34 states. Many 7-Eleven stores are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and this new option makes it possible for taxpayers to pay their taxes in cash without having to go to an IRS Taxpayer Assistance Center. Victoria's Secret is looking to stay ahead of its impressive sales momentum by restructuring and cutting jobs. The lingerie brand's owner, L. Bronze, says that Victoria's Secret will operate in three business units, lingerie, beauty, and the teen line Pink, getting rid of certain merchandise categories. Uber has agreed to pay $25 million to settle a lawsuit filed by San Francisco and Los Angeles, alleging that the ride-hailing service misled customers about its safety. As part of the settlement, Uber in San Francisco will no longer claim that its background checks are the toughest in the industry. Mona Rivera, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It is 520, and last night the Fed chairs, current and president, present were on the television doing a special, I believe for CNN, CNN Money. The Fed Chairman Janet Yellen says, "We think a gradual path of rate increases will be appropriate, given the economy has made and is likely to continue to make, as part of her discussion, very slow progress." That it was the concerning part to me as we continue our discussion this morning with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management. She's still concerned about where things are headed.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're looking at central banks around the world that are pushing rates lower. We have negative interest rates around the world, and we're the only one sitting well above 1% on a 5 or 10 year bond. So there are concerns about what's happening around the world, and then how does our monetary policy dovetail with all of the other policies that are very, very easy at this point? And they're trying hard to raise interest rates because, again, they believe they want to have some firepower for the next recession. But as we've seen since 2008, they don't necessarily need that. They've got quantitative easing and some of these new policies that Bernanke has brought in to the Fed's arsenal.
I don't know if you were watching earlier this week, but I guess the global Janet Yellen, Christine Lagarde from the International Monetary Fund this week actually told the U.S., you need to raise minimum wage, you need to do all these things. She's concerned about us. Is that something we should be paying attention to?
She's been kind of jawboning the Fed a little bit as far as, you know, we need to cut our interest rates. We need to be a little bit easier, more in line with the rest of the world. She sees us raising interest rates as a problem for many other countries, because as we raise rates, we make the dollar a little bit stronger, and that makes it a little bit tougher for us to sell our goods abroad. So again, it is a concern, but we'll see how this all plays out. We're only in the early chapters of this still.
I'd like to ask you a few questions about what you do, because we were talking about this before the show started as well. As a portfolio manager, somebody who manages the assets of people, what are the characteristics that people look for when they come with their money to you and say, invest for me?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is they have some goals and objectives in mind. They have something that they want to accomplish, and they want to have somebody that is paying attention to what's going on in the world and investing and something that they understand. And a lot of times when I talk to clients, they have portfolio stuff. It may be here, there, and everywhere. They'd like to have it organized a little bit, or they've lost track of. They have, you know, maybe 40, 50 different stocks in their portfolio, but a variety of mutual funds, and they don't quite understand what's all going on with the portfolio. So we try to bring some rationalization to it. And in many cases, when we talk to our clients, because they have things everywhere, we talk to them about consolidating and making things easy, maybe not necessarily for them, but certainly the next generation as they get into retirement and beyond, to be able to handle moving that money to the next generation.
If somebody's trying to do this themselves, there are potential huge mistakes that could be costly for them, right?
There are. Certainly with the 401k rollovers, IRA distributions, required minimum distributions as you get 70 and a half and beyond, tax implications for capital gains, et cetera. So there's a lot of moving parts, and certainly Congress doesn't sit still when it comes to tax law. So there's a lot of changes that go on every year, things that you need to be cognizant of. And one of the issues that we have, too, is or a lot of our clients have, is the lack of a pension. So they're looking at, all right, so when I quit, I don't get a paycheck anymore. How do I do that? What do I do? And addressing those issues are really important.
How important is it to have somebody like you who's very calm, it seems? Because I know other people who are just all over the place, and especially the people who are doing the day trading and the investors on the day-to-day basis are just sort of manic. But is it important to have a calm presence as your portfolio manager, somebody who says, don't worry, it's fine?
Yeah, certainly the key to a lot of to investing is a longer term view and not get caught up in the day to day jumping around. And certainly when you're talking to a client, you want to be the calming influence to a lot of, because they see the news, they see what's going on, they see the markets up and down 100, 200 points, and certainly they're very concerned about it. But when you have a longer term view, year, 2 years, 5 year view, the day-to-day tends to be a little bit more noise than it is excitement.
So as we head into the weekend, what looks good? Where would you suggest we put our money this week?
Well, as we've talked the last couple of weeks, we're still cautious. And certainly this week has been a week to point that up, as we've moved 100 points almost every day this week. I'm still generally cautious on the market. We're coming up to earnings season. Earnings might be a little bit of a disappointment, and part of the reason why we're seeing the volatility in the market here. So again, playing a lot of the consumer stocks, a little bit more safety, a little bit more in bonds than we would normally have at this point. So again, playing it a little close to the vest.
Procrastinator Nation, this is a big weekend for us. We're putting together our taxes, doing our taxes. What is the advice as we do that? Is looking ahead to next year in terms of retirement and savings and planning?
Well, really, it's not so much the IRA, it's really the 401k. And so you want to be able to put as much money into a 401k as you can, certainly up to the match that you're getting from the company that you're working for. But you also want to balance that out. You don't want to retire with $1 million, $2 million in an IRA account and nothing else, because that's where you're going to have to pull retirement income. So you'd like to balance that out by having personal assets grow and have if you were to do $1 million in retirement, a $500,000 in personal asset, $500,000 in an IRA is an ideal situation. It gives you a lot of choices then on how you pull money tax efficiently.
Here's some free advice. Get a portfolio manager, preferably Paul Nolte, and go exercise and stay healthy so you can spend that retirement money when you get there. Paul, thanks for being with us on the opening bell. By the way, Paul's monthly notes are they're weekly, actually.
Yeah, no, I do weekly.
Monthly notes. You can now sign up. You don't have to be his client to get this. They've got a special page for you. You can go to
kingsview.com/WGN.
There it is. It's very easy. All you have to do is sign up. There's a page there, and you'll get his Nolte notes every week. Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul Nolte, thank you very much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank
you.
Have
a great weekend.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 538. Welcome back to the program. April showers bring May flowers, but we have flowers for you a little early. We have the mid-April. That's because one of our topics this morning on The Opening Bell is flowers for dreams. A Chicago startup, a Chicago company that has flowers everywhere. Steve Dime is the founder. He's with us on The Opening Bell this morning. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good to be here. I'm well.
I'm glad you're with us. Tell us about Flowers for Dreams and how it started.
Sure. We started the company about 3 years ago. We actually, my co-founder and I, started as flower peddlers here in Chicago outside college graduations and commencement ceremonies when we were in college. And several years later, kind of sifting through the flower industry, we realized, you know, there just wasn't many good options for sending or buying flowers, particularly online. So we wanted to make a more accessible way to buy flowers locally, a more inspiring way to do it, something that reflected our millennial values and aesthetic preferences. So we created Flowers for Dreams to sell locally crafted flowers for fair and honest prices, with free delivery, often by bike, anywhere in the city. And every single bouquet benefits an amazing local charity. A quarter of our profits each month go to a different charity.
What sort of charities are you benefiting, like, for instance, this month?
So this month, actually, is the Garfield Park Conservatory Alliance. You're probably familiar with Garfield Park. This is a nonprofit that is working to not only enhance the conservatory, but get people there and get people to understand the merits of green, the merits of protecting and respecting the environment, and also to keep the conservatory alive and well.
The Garfield Park Conservatory, by the way, if you live in Chicago and you've never been there, shame on you, is probably one of the best kept secrets in the city. And as soon as they get the glass replaced and all of that, because a few years ago, the hailstorm really did a number there. That's
yes.
A good charity. So, you know, people are going to say, the pessimists and the critics among this will say, well, how can you be a locally conscious flower company when all of your flowers come from other places? I mean, it takes a lot of different sorts of transportation modes to get you flowers, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, we're in Chicago, so we'll be pretty frank in saying it's very difficult to source our flowers entirely locally year-round. So when we can't, when we just physically can't get it from the first frost until the beginning of spring, we are buying flowers via local markets, and sometimes they do come from other parts of the country and even outside the country. And then at that point, we're really trying to just ensure it's responsibly sourced. So they get certain organic certifications, Veriflora, Rainforest Alliance. There's certain ones that we're constantly looking for. And then also that these are done and grown in such a way that respect workers' rights, again, the environment. But, you know, part of how we are a little bit different is during the summer months and spring months, we have some interesting farm partnerships where we're buying directly from local farms. One of our amazing partners quickly is the Cook County Jail. They have we helped start their rehabilitative flower farm, which is a 1-acre farm where inmates have the choice to come and actually, from a therapeutic and rehabilitative perspective, farm flowers. And we help actually pay for the farm. And it's one of the places where we source our flowers. So we have a lot of innovative and interesting ways to keep our flowers here and then also make sure when they're not coming from here that they're coming in a responsible way.
And it's about doing things in baby steps because, you know, I asked the question to play devil's advocate because if there were a million companies that do what you do, it's going to make an impact globally, but it's also having an impact when there are a few companies like yours at least trying.
Right. Well, you got to start somewhere. We didn't have a huge locally sourced options. There's not a huge local flower farm industry here in Chicago, naturally. You know, our labor markets are expensive and all the things you would expect. But you're right. You know, you got to start somewhere. And we're really excited to continue to more vertically integrate our startup and hopefully one day be able to actually source the product entirely in-house.
The delivery thing, that when you call and you order flowers, my mother lives in another city in another place, and it's always, when I send her flowers, I always, you know, you have to call that, I'm not going to name the place, but you just never know what you're going to get. And that's part of what you guys do best, is that you kind of know what you're going to get.
Yeah, we keep it really simple. That was part of our MO. I mean, we wanted something that really, when we started the company a couple of years ago, we wanted something that reflected our values, our preferences, and we wanted something simple. So we only have 6 different bouquets you can choose from online. They're all $35, again, delivered free. So we keep it really simple, and we make sure that it's completely transparent the whole way. So the customer is actually receiving what they paid for online.
What is the future looking like for Flowers for Dreams?
Well, you know, we've always had ambitions to expand nationally. Right now, we're doing very well in Chicago. We hope to continue kind of spreading our message of, you know, flowers that are for a cause and also flowers that are really just cool and beautiful. We really wanted to make flowers inspiring again. So, you know, we're focused on being awesome in Chicago. One of our ambitions is vertically integrating even further. And then, of course, hopefully one day we can be in other major metro markets.
Can I ask you a silly question? I know there's no silly question, but this might be silly. Why is there no smell to flowers now, some flowers?
That's a fantastic question. And most often people see that, you know, in grocery stores and the like, which have actually become a phenomenal option for buying flowers for very, very inexpensive prices in terms of walk-in. But, you know, because they're now grown with pesticides and because they're grown in the same way we have GMO foods, where they're hyper, injected with such things to make them stronger and better and grow more of them, the smell has become one of those things that are no longer scientifically or socially significant for the flowers to produce and produce at a low cost. So that's my best unscientific reason, but it's an interesting phenomenon that unfortunately it's one of the best side effects of flowers that no longer is often a side effect.
Yeah, and it's really sad because that's the whole point of flowers generally, their beauty and the smell, right?
I mean, I think so.
Yeah, me too. Well, Stephen Dodd, thank you for being with us. Good luck to you in the future as you move forward with Flowers for Dreams. You can find them online, flowersfordreams.com, pretty easy, and on Twitter, flowers, the number 4 for dreams. Thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell.
No problem. And follow us on Snapchat, too. That's the future.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:50 on the market desk this morning. Dow futures pointing toward a higher open on Wall Street. The Dow futures up 90. S&P and NASDAQ futures higher as well. For the latest on commodities, let's bring in Orion Samuelson. Good morning, Orion.
Steve, good morning. And as we look back at yesterday's cash hog trade in the Midwest, again, holding pretty much steady. Not much change from Wednesday's prices. Enough supplies to meet packer demand for the balance of the week. In Illinois, with a steady market in the country, they paid $43, and at processing plants, they paid $45 a hundredweight. Now, let's look at the futures story at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and the cattle trade. Cattle contracts up modestly yesterday with help from short covering. And the April live cattle ended up 35 cents a hundredweight at $132.42. Cash sales in the Southern Plains so far this week, $132 to $134 per hundredweight, compared with mostly $133 last week. And today or yesterday, a small number of cash cattle in Nebraska moved at 135 to 136. And the hog futures were firm as well with the cash market. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. The U.S. Department of Justice and Homeland Security Department last week provided new insights into the impact of ransomware and cyber attacks on public institutions and the public. Ransomware is a type of computer virus that scrambles victims' files and demands ransom in exchange for code to restore them. There's also a new scary trend of hackers being able to get into all kinds of things like hospitals and even cameras on the streets and streetlights as well and stoplights. Joining us this morning, ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan from Dallas, who's been following this. Jim, this is getting concerning. It seems like these attacks are increasing.
Well, apparently very at risk. You know, the more we depend upon computers and technology and automation to run our public systems, the water system, you know, the power grid, even the traffic lights. Imagine, Steve, if somebody could get into those systems and disrupt them. You'd have car accidents. You'd have water disruptions. You'd have all sorts of issues out there. We've seen it happen with simply malfunctions, breakdowns of those systems. If something were to be done intentionally, you can imagine the sort of disruption that would cause in the lives of people who are depending on those things, Steve.
Well, you know, we've been hearing a lot about this recently, especially with these ransomware cases. There was a hospital that was hit. There are now, you know, hackers that can shut down medical devices. You've talked about traffic lights. It seems to me that we're not playing a good defense where this is concerned. What is the solution?
You're right. You know, and to think back to the 1990s when police departments around the country were arming themselves with semi-automatic weapons because that's what the criminal element out there had. And these days in 2016, it seems that those hackers, those people who are intent on doing harm, have better technology than the good guys. And so consider this. Private industry spends about 7% of its annual budgets on average on cybersecurity, ensuring that its information systems are secure. Governments, local governments, spend only 3 to 5% of their budgets that same way. So you can imagine those public entities are sort of at risk.
And so we scratch our heads and think, well, why isn't this higher up on the priority list for people, especially law enforcement, for the government? Why aren't they taking this more seriously and putting this at the top?
Well, in a lot of cases, it seems that they don't consider the abating that risk worth the cost. They think that it costs too much to try to ensure something that probably won't happen in the first place. It's like, you know, getting a vaccine. You're probably not going to catch West Nile, but you need to get a vaccine just in case you might be exposed. So I think that companies sort of look at it that way. They don't want to make the investment. But we're seeing now that that industry out there, the cybersecurity industry, is worth about $3 billion at this point, and climbing as companies are created simply and specifically to respond to those threats.
There are some analysts who monitor this very closely who say it's going to take a 9/11 style attack, cyber attack, for the government, for people to really ratchet this up and take it seriously.
You're right. And consider, you know, if you look at maybe the top 20 or 30 largest cities in America, they've started to get on board and get things done. But if you look at the sort of the middle tier, the middle market cities out there, those with 100,000, 200,000 people, those communities are still very vulnerable. They're still dealing with budget problems and budget crises that may not have them hiring that cybersecurity specialist who should be right there at City Hall.
You mentioned these traffic lights, 200,000 vulnerable and insecure traffic control sensors in places all over the country, I'm guessing. Is it North Korea? Is it China that's doing this? Or are these just all kinds of criminals that are hacking into these systems?
Well, they had the opportunity to do that. So far, I mean, those are vulnerable systems. They're not ones that have been broken into, but those are the ones with potential cracks in their security systems that could allow someone to sneak in and create harm, you know, mischief at the least and real mayhem at the worst. And so, yeah, cities like Washington, New York, Seattle, San Francisco, and even Chicago, you know, have those potentials out there for cyber hackers to get in.
And we're not even talking about all of the records and personal information that's been stolen over the years, the identities that have been thieved. That's another story.
Or just leaked out. Here in Texas, for example, Steve, the Texas Comptroller's Office had a leak in its security, or a data breach in 2011. 3 million private records were released out there, or they were lost briefly, if you will. It's not thought that anybody, you know, had any serious harm done from that, but it sort of points out that if something like that can happen accidentally, imagine what can be done by somebody with bad intent.
You cover these stories. You know this better than anybody. What can we do personally to protect ourselves from this sort of stuff?
make sure that you're using malware and software on your computer. To keep your computer updated. Keep the software updated, the drivers and the security malware systems in place, and don't turn them off. You know, that it's always sort of, I guess, the temptation to speed up your computer by locking those malware devices. Don't do that. Just make sure that they are updated and that they are secure, and that patches that if they are issued by software companies are installed on your computer.
And then the traffic control stuff when we're out in our cars, that's sort of beyond our control, I guess, right?
It really is. There's not much you can do except just be very careful and consider that, you know, that red light that you're coming up to, there may be a malfunction that creates a green light for the other cars and you end up in a collision.
ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan with us this morning from Dallas. That's the opening bell for this morning. Our producer is Mary Sandberg. Production help from Bennett Wakenight. Our engineer this morning is Bob Ferguson. Ben Cortez generally here during the week, but we welcome Bob today. Thank you for your help. Glad you're here. And Steve Cochran is next. The big show coming up. We'll be back bright and early Monday morning with another edition of the opening bell. Until then, have a great day and a great weekend.